Welcome to Truthiverse, the number one podcast for free and discerning minds. I'm your host, Brendan Murphy, author and founder of The Truthiversity. As a freedom hacker and truth addict, it's my job to help you reclaim yourself from illusion and live in your power. Living in truth sets you free to holistically upgrade your entire life so you can explore infinite possibility. Join me as we hack our way to a higher evolution. Hey, and welcome. Truthiverse is an audience-supported podcast and an audience-supported Substack as well. You can find me over there on Substack at Official Brendan Murphy. And if you enjoy this work, please join the growing body of consciously evolving minds and voyage with us into forgotten and forbidden realms of knowledge. So do hit that like button, share with your fellow seekers, and if you hadn't yet, please do consider becoming a paid subscriber, whether it's over on my Substack or through buying me a coffee right here via the podcast. Also, feel free to check out my private evolutionary accelerator, Evolve Yourself, over at evolveyourself.live for the free masterclass. And of course, I do invite you to join me inside the members-only Truthiversity for all premium content, including part two of every podcast. See truthiversity.com for more information. Researching, writing, and podcasting is what I do full-time, so thanks in advance for your support. It does mean a lot to me.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this episode of Truthiverse. I have the pleasure of being joined by Dr. Sam Osmanagic. And without further ado, he is of the Bosnian pyramid fame. So I'm going to let him introduce himself, and we're going to get into his amazing work, uncovering the structures in Bosnia, the Bosnian pyramids, which he is famous around the world for. So, Dr. Sam, thank you so much for joining me and having a chat.
Hello, Brendan. I'm glad to be with you this evening. Well, so my name is Dr. Sam Osmanagic, and for more than four decades, I have been researching pyramids and megalithic sites around the world. And I have concluded that almost everything they teach us about the ancient history is wrong. The origin of man, civilizations, and pyramids. As far as humanity, they are telling us that we are a product of the evolution. I don't think so. Man is a product of genetic engineering, happened about 400,000 years back. Civilizations, they program us to think that everything started with Sumerians, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 years ago. Babylon, Akkad, Assyria, Hittites, ancient Egypt, ancient China, and ancient India. And that would be wrong too. This is just the last cycle of humanity. Last 100,000 years, we've been having at least five civilizational cycles. And number three, they again program us to think that the pyramids are built only in Egypt and Mexico, and that the Egyptian pyramids were tombs for the pharaohs. Wrong, wrong. Pyramids had been built on all six continents. And according to non-scientific Wikipedia, non-scientific Encyclopedia Britannica, non-scientific Smithsonian, they are telling us that Egyptian pyramids were tombs for the pharaohs, built 4,500 years back, and that there are 118 pyramids. Well, I have visited and investigated 155 pyramids. Not a single one is home for the pharaohs or kings. No mummies. Mm-hmm. Mummies were buried in other places, like Valley of Kings, 600 kilometers to the south from the Giza Plateau, Karnak, Thebes, Memphis, Abydos, Dendera. So from this short introduction, it's obvious that I think differently. I am open-minded scientist. My PhD is about the Mayan pyramids. I've traveled extensively in the jungles of Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, and Belize. There are more than 100,000 pyramids in Central America. Only 3% have been uncovered, meaning majority of them is still under the forest. I am the author of 20 books. They've been translated into 17 languages, and I've been writing mostly about the ancient civilizations and pyramids. Totally different view than what they teach us in schools. So, for the short introduction, I think it can be enough.
Well, I mean, I love it. I feel like I get the impression you can probably talk for hours without needing anybody to prompt you with questions.
Unfortunately, you are right.
I'm happy for you to do that too, by the way. So where do you want to? I wanted to first ask you. I actually wanted to ask you, what's your origin story? I mean, why were you interested in any of this stuff in the first place?
You know, when I was younger, when I was a teenager, if you wanted to find out about something, some topic, some issue, instead of going to, like today, to internet, Wikipedia, reading a couple of sentences, thinking that you know everything about the subject, those times, 30 or 40 years back, you had to buy a book and read the book. So in my 20s, I would read 100 books per year, year after year after year. And I would be reading from really different subjects, you know, from history or religions or geography or political systems or psychology, sci-fi, different stuff. This is where you learned about the big picture. Even today, thanks to that knowledge and thanks to that methodology from decades ago, when I go to the sites, I'm bringing already a lot of knowledge and skills and ability to conclude stuff. And then, so I think that was very, very helpful to me. And one thing that I liked the most was history. Because a lot of gray areas in history, I simply felt that it is mostly wrong. And then when I started traveling extensively in my 20s, especially in my 30s and so on, then I realized that really what they are giving us, what they serve us in those books is wrong. What they serve us through media, through educational system. For example, Machu Picchu, Eastern Peru. Everybody's telling us, every source, every reference, that this is the royal retreat for Incas. Now, Incas were in the area from the 12th to beginning to the 15th century, beginning of the 16th century. But when you get to the site, when you see the construction, you realize that you have at least four distinctive construction techniques. And surprisingly, the first one, the first blocks, the oldest blocks in the foundations are the biggest one, the most superior one. This is not what they teach us in schools. They're telling us evolution, evolution. Before we were primitive, we were caveman level. And today, in 21st century, we are the most developed, the most intelligent, the most beautiful. Well, we are not. So much picture you go there. The first blocks are up to 250 tons in mass. 250 tons. And once the physical chemical analysis was done, we realized that these blocks don't have origin around it, but from Bolivia, which is 150 kilometers, 100 miles away. So who moved 250 tons from Bolivia with no access roads. Even today, there are no roads to Machu Picchu. You have to go by train, only last few kilometers by bus. The second civilization, a little bit younger, they were using blocks and they were tens of tons in mass. And they were polygonal blocks, meaning they have more than four sides, more than four corners. Six, seven, eight, 10, 12. The one with the most size that I've seen in Peru had 24 sides, 24 corners. It's like a very complicated puzzle. Now imagine 24 corners. You know, you need to have many blocks around it so they fit perfectly, like they do. Today we would need maybe 10 or 15 cranes to fit them at the same time. It's very, very complicated. The third civilization, they use blocks like the ancient Romans 2000 years back. The blocks were from 500 kilos to 2 tons. They were rectangular, square, rather simple. And the fourth, the most recent civilization, Incas 1000 years back, they were using small rocks. They were dividing those huge walls, making partitions and chambers with the primitive rules, and this is where they were bringing their royals. So instead of the evolution, you have different process, devolution.
Yeah.
The most superior were the oldest, and I suspect 55,000 years. The second one, 12,000. The third one, 5,000. And the fourth one, thousands of years when the site was abandoned, ancient Incas came. And like I said, when you go to those places, when you compare what is in the books, I mean, this is a huge gap. And then you realize that there is a reason for that. They want to teach us that we humans, the civilizations, are just a few thousand years around, that we are in infant stage. And if you're a baby, baby needs someone who's going to take care of the baby. Elites, political, corporate, media, religious. So, you know, unfortunately, always politics behind everything, including history and archaeology. So this was the reason why I decided that really the history and archaeology is something that I'm really most interested in. And then pyramids, you know, pyramids being built around the planet on all six continents, something that really amazing was amazing. In China, in the central province of Shaanxi, 250 pyramids. And then you can see the oldest pyramids are 20, the biggest ones. They were built 3,500 years back. And those that they came later, from 2,300 years ago until 1,000 before present, they were built from the mud bricks, from inferior material. The oldest one from sandstone and granite. Those that they came later, mud brick. In Egypt, the same situation. You have 28 huge stone pyramids, including what Egyptologists called Khufu, for some reason, even though he was not builder. Khufu was you know, pharaoh of the fourth dynasty. Then his son or his brother, Khafre, his grandson, Mykerinos or Meseren. So we have 28 those huge pyramids, you know, those in Hawara, in Dakshur, in Abydos, and so on. And there is no way that in pharaonic times they had means, they had technology, they had transportation means, they had equipment to cut, to transport, to install such huge structures, to apply so much of the astronomical knowledge, elements of sacred geometry, number pi, number phi, golden section, and so on. And you realize it was built much, much, much before. So really, almost everything they teach us about the history is wrong. And I knew that was the area I had to be involved.
Okay. So you that motivated, that sense of how wrong it was part of your motivation.
Correct.
And did you have preconceptions about Bosnia, you know, having something amazing there?
No, not really. But once I look behind, you know, I discovered the Bosnian pyramids 18 years ago in 2005. But until then, it was like an invisible hand was taking me, showing me the pyramids in Central America. This is where I did my PhD, my doctorate. Then pyramids in Peru, in Bolivia, in China, Indonesia, Cambodia, Australia, Canary, Nubian pyramids in Sudan, Egyptian, of course. In Spain, we have pyramids in the town of Palencia, Sicily, Sardinia, ancient Greece. So once I learned about the pyramids, that they don't have to be exactly the same like Egyptian pyramids, that majority of them are actually covered by soil, vegetation, forest. Once I learned about the common features, for example, orientation, towards the cardinal points, side orientation, east, west, north, south. Once I learned stuff like that, it seemed that I was ready. And then I came to my home country of Bosnia. Before that, I was spending like 25 years in Houston, Texas. I came to visit, you know, a local museum in this little town of Visoko, near the capital city of Sarajevo. But what really caught my attention was this, everybody called it Natural Hill. because it was covered by forests and still it is majority. But I was looking, wow, four sides, four triangular faces, four corners, same slope from bottom to the top. I took compass, and compass showed me the side orientations to the cardinal points. For me, there was no doubt. It was an artificial structure that's been covered by soil and vegetation after thousands of years. The same scenario like in China or Mexico or Guatemala. So the first year, 2005, I applied for the permissions from the preliminary research. I got the permission to do that. Everything I did was further evidence that it was artificial structure. So I wrote a book about the discovery. I organized a big press conference and a lot of media came, even Reuters, Associated Press, France Press, and so on. And the news went to the world. The first pyramids in Europe have been discovered. After that, I established non-profit foundation for the archaeological research. The reason why, first I went to the Department of Archaeology, the University of Sarajevo. I offered them collaboration. They said, oh, no, it's impossible. We know every square meter of Bosnia, there are no pyramids. We don't know 95% of what is below the ground. I went to the National Museum. This lady said, oh, we never had pharaohs. We cannot have pyramids. I realized these people live in 19th century. I said, okay, fine. Then I established a foundation under the name Archaeological Park Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun Foundation. And in the last 18 years, it has become the most active archaeological site in the world. Every year, hundreds of volunteers. So far, 3,750 of them from 64 countries and six continents came to Visoko to research, to help us dig the biggest pyramids in the world. And then, you know, after 18 years, this is what we concluded. We have a complex of six pyramids. Bosnian pyramid of the sun, moon, dragon, earth, love, and the sixth pyramid, and a huge network of underground tunnels. So far, we have cleared 3.2 kilometers, about 2 miles of prehistorical underground tunnels. I mean, when I see that 50 meters, 160 feet of underground tunnels is discovered, let's say in Teotihuacan, Mexico, under the Pyramid City, this is the world sensation. When they discover little underground tunnels in Egypt or China, wow, everybody talks about it. We have 3.2 kilometers. And they are right now, we found seven entrances and they are on two different levels. This is huge, but I believe what we have so far is just a fraction of original length of the network. I believe at least 60 miles or 100 kilometers of the tunnels we have. So it's really very exciting. It's completely new discovery. And of course, listen, when you're coming with the new ideas, many people against you, especially in this field. Archaeologists, geologists, historians, museum curators, everybody again, they wanted to stop me in the beginning. Bosnian cultural establishment, they asked government to take away my, you know, permission, my license and stuff like that. But this project has become so popular in this country. So many people are supporting it. So the government said, no, we're going to be giving them permissions. But no money, no organizational support, no marketing, no grants, no money whatsoever. And I said, that's fine. Let us work, and we're going to find a way to finance ourselves. So first, you know, 15 years, I was the biggest donor because I had my business in Houston, which I sold in the meantime, and I moved back here completely. And every year, the number of visitors increase. For example, Brandon, 2018, we had 40,000 visitors, which we attracted to the site. 2019, 50,000. 2020, 75,000. 2021, 135,000. 2022, 155. 2023, last year, 200,000. I expect in a few years, we're going to have 500,000. In 10 years, we're going to have 1 million. And you know, such increased number of visitors since we charged the entrance to the tunnels with the guide on the pyramid and, you know, sell a few books, souvenirs, and so on, we are able to finance ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So this project is self-financed. We actually need no government money to help us with that, even though we are on a friendly, you know, a friendly relationship with them. We invite them to come and see. And, you know, for them, it's the matter of tourism now. It's good for the country. So they let us work. Very important.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is awesome. I was going to say, you know, that must be for them. They must be absolutely ecstatic with the amount of tourism it's bringing in.
Yeah, I mean, Bosnia is a small country. It's one of the poorest country in Europe. Unfortunately, one of the most corrupted, if not the most corrupted country in Europe. But, you know, projects like this, you know, can all only be welcomed, really. I see no reason why they would not support that with the amount of tourists, volunteers, media attention. And besides the archaeological sites, the pyramids and tunnels, we purchased, or I purchased, I spent all my savings from US, 100,000 square meters of neglected land. It's more than 1 million square feet. And we turned that muddy, you know, swampy land into the most beautiful park in Europe. We have over 60 installations, Labyrinth of Love, Labyrinth of Energy, Labyrinth of Health. We have concert stages. We have stages for yoga, for meditation. We organize festivals, concerts, fairs, you know, with the organic food. You know, we are big on healthy, organic stuff. You know, we even built a sport complex, tennis stadium was opened a year and a half ago by the best tennis player ever, Novak Djokovic, in July of 2022. He made a special show that day, 2,000 spectators, 75 media. And guess what? They were not talking about the negative stuff about Bosnia, corruption, criminals, wars, stuff like that. But tourism, tennis, sport, young people, positive stuff. And that's what we are all about good energy, about spiritual peace, serenity, harmony with the nature, harmony among us. So our message is much more powerful, much wider than in the beginning. In the beginning, it was archaeology, digging, first biggest, oldest pyramids. It was archaeology. Then it became scientific project. We added a lot of physicists, electrical engineers, medical doctors, sound engineers, doing all kinds of measurements, proving that pyramids are actually energy amplifiers. They amplify natural sources of energy, and that energy can be used for the communication, for the healing, for the development of spiritual senses, immunity, improvement of the molecular structure of the water, food. So it's completely new world, you know, in science. And then now we have a culture, we have a sports, we have creation, we have non-discrimination, you know. Okay. So all of a sudden, this project is about a different concept of future. Because what we offer today, the new Western values of transhumanism, in which more than 99% of people are supposed to be fully controlled and manipulated by technology, face recognition, they should be able, according to the plans, to turn us on and off. And less than 1%, we are talking about 0.025%, which is about 3,000 super billionaires. They are supposed to combine neurons, brain cells, and their memories with the artificial intelligence so they can create something that will become immortal. So this is the vision of this, you know, very few of the elites for the humanity. I don't think, you know, it's going to work out for them well. You know, immortality, really, except for God, does not exist. Nobody can reach that, and we cannot take the God's prerogatives. So I don't think it's going to end up well for them. And as far as humanity, you know, I can just hope that people get informed well. We had a period of, you know, Corona time, 3 years, that was very unfortunate. And we noticed that many actions people take because of the fear. This is how they make their decisions. Very sad times. You know, Brendan, 5 or 10 years ago, traveling the world and meeting all kind of people who are coming to my lectures, I thought that maybe 50% of people is ready. You know, their consciousness is on a certain level. They are spiritually progressed, developed. But then with Corona time, I realized 90% is not ready. 5% maybe, and you have another 5% who are fighting the efforts of those who want to help their fellow, you know, brothers and citizens and so on. So, you know, I think number one, it's up to us, you know, how we're going to react, if we're going to pass the tests or not. And we have tests every day.
Yeah, I mean, well, especially someone doing what you're doing. Can you talk to any of the recent, I mean, recent challenges? Are you getting any interference, or is it just, you know, more, you know, less dramatic things that are challenges on a day-to-day basis?
You know, tomorrow I'm starting with my European tour. It will be 11 countries. It will be 35 days, 5 weeks. And the first stop is Croatia. Second stop is Slovenia. Talking about challenges, when my visit was announced in the local media, I was supposed to have a couple of lectures in the local libraries. And then the head of the Department of Archaeology at the University of Ljubljana, the capital, she and a couple of her friends put a lot of pressure to those libraries to cancel my lecture. And it was canceled. And then people who organized my trip to Slovenia, they tried another library in another town, not in Ljubljana, but in another town. That one was canceled too. And then you realize that those dark forces never sleep, even though it's been 18 years now. But they never talk publicly anything. They just work behind the scene. But listen, those challenges are something that happen every day. Especially if you're coming with some new ideas, big ideas. The bigger the idea, more people want to defend the old system, want to keep the status quo. And, you know, they felt that they are, you know, that's against them. And actually, it's not really against them as per se, but it is against their views, against their closed-mindedness, you know. If you are head of Department of Archaeology at the university, or director of Archaeological Institute, or Institute of History, or Ministry of Culture, I mean, people usually think that the science ends with them. They know everything, no progress. Well, guess what? If we don't act as students, it doesn't matter if we are 7 or 77 years old, then there is no future for us. If we are open-minded, if we are ready to accept new information, new knowledge, and if you need to change the history books, if your PhD turns out to be wrong, the way we teach kids or they teach kids is wrong also, what's the problem with that? That's the purpose of the science, to get us a new view. History or chemistry or biology and so on.
Yeah, exactly. It just seems like, do you think most of the problem, most of the resistance, Sam, comes from those types of people who are just too egoically invested in their status and their belief system and the institution they work with and all this kind of thing?
In my particular case, it's a little bit more than that. You have people who are jealous, who are envy, who don't know, lack of knowledge, and things like that. But, interfering with the view of the history is rather dangerous. One would not think so, but it is. They teach us with the purpose that we are just 5, 6 thousand years old. Nothing before that was in existence, no advanced civilizations. But guess what? Of course, there were advanced civilizations, human civilizations as well, but not only humans, not only Homo sapiens. So, we've been having those advanced visitors, I would say, for thousands of years. And that piece of information alone would change so much. The religious system, even political system, the view how common people see their leaders. And so, this is what they're afraid of. So many circle, elite circle in England, France, Germany, and the US don't want the world to know about the real age of the pyramids, the real purpose of pyramids. It's an ancient technology. And the real builders. And number two is jealousy, envy, because those guys behind the scene, they tell the second echelon, you attack him, it changes everything, blah, 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 blah. So that's just the second level. The first one is something much more serious.
And do you think that first level is at the top? Do you think they actually do have that knowledge of who did what, who built things, who they were, all that sort of stuff? Or is it more, a little bit more vague than that, do you think?
Of course they do. They have a lot of knowledge, but generation after generation, some of the knowledge has been lost. But have in mind that a lot of books from the library of Alexandria or Baghdad, Istanbul, Damascus, the places that the libraries, burned, but a lot of knowledge ended up in private hands, in the hands of those elites, even on the US soil. If you go back to mid of 19th century when Smithsonian Institute was established, their first task was to destroy all mounds around the country, the tumulus phenomenon, tumuli. And while destroying it, they were finding a lot of archaeological material. They were finding bones of some beings 4 meters in height, it's 13, 14, 15 feet. And I remember reading an article in Chicago Tribune from 1894. They were doing an interview with the head of one of the teams who were actually destroying those mounds. And he admitted, he said, yes, we've destroyed so many of them. The archaeological material have been shipped to Washington, D.C., in the underground warehouses, and they're still there. So I don't think that people today know what's below their warehouses. Remember that Indiana Jones movie, first part, when he finally found something so big after so much trouble, and it just becomes another wooden crate with thousands of the others. So a lot of secrets on this planet. So basically, it seems to me that they just wanted to hide stuff from the public. And that's exactly what Smithsonian and many other museums do. Instead of showing the public, they hide from the public 99% of the most important findings. And this is very unfortunate because it is cultural heritage that belongs to all of us. Unfortunately, they control police, governments, military. This is how they get all of that. And, when we were younger, we thought that the governments are the ones running the show. But actually, they are not. I mean, those who are in charge of money printing, are running the show. And those are not the governments. Take the US, for example, Fed. Federal Reserve. This is private organization. It's not governmental organization or paralegal. That's the Pratt organization, which was established back in 1913 by nine biggest banking families. You had Rothschild Paris, Rothschild London, Rothschild Frankfurt, Rothschild Barcelona, Rothschild Napoli. And then you have, of course, Rockefellers, you have Morgans, you have DuPont. You have... So those families established Fed. And of course, they got the Congress backing. They actually, the ones who print the money, loaning the money to the US government with the interest.
Mm-hmm.
They make a lot of money. The governments are in debt with those people. If we think that in Europe is a little bit better, then we are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there is a thing which is called European Central Bank, and they're saying, oh, it's a bank which is comprised of 27 national banks. Yes and no. What is the national bank? National bank, the government does not have majority over shares over there. Private banks do. Again, Rothschild Paris. And where is European Central Bank located? Not in Brussels, where you have executive branch. Not in Strasbourg, where you have a parliament. But in Frankfurt. Who's in Frankfurt? Well, Frankfurt is the capital of the Rothschild family for the last 250 years. So those who can see, they will realize what's really going on. You know, when it comes to my knowledge, I got sociology, political sciences, and economics. I have one of my master's is in international economics. So I know a little bit about the economy. And I've been having businesses all my life. I sold my business after 28 years, a couple of years back.
Mm-hmm.
One thing you learn, you have enough quantity of money to cover your economy. If your economy is more successful, you print a little bit more money so you can allow for the progress. But if your economy, because of businesses, bankrupting, stuff like that, is getting smaller, then you should have less money. That's so logical. Otherwise, you're going to have an inflation. What was happening during Corona time? 2020, 2021, 2022. People were forced to stay at home. They could not work. They could not go to their manufacturing facilities. Around the world, it's not just the US or UK or France, everywhere. But they were not working, they were not producing, they were not making any new values. And guess what? US has printed $3,800 billion. $4,000 billion. Europe, worse, 6,000 billion euros. Why? Because governments are not in charge, but those people behind the scene. Why don't you see Rothschilds or Rockefellers as the richest people in the world? You would expect them that they have $500 billion. You know, comparing to Elon Musk, 200 billion, or Zuckerberg, or Bill Gates, and so on. Well, they don't need to be on Forbes list because they print the money.
Yeah, yeah.
So they are number one. Governments, they're pawns, they're you know, pawns, they're. Well, anyway, that's the world situation. We started to talk about the history, and then I came back to the reality. But, you know, it's been like that forever. Manipulation. You know how the money started, the origin of the money. 5,000 years back, Babylonian, the king, did not have enough funds. So he said, okay, let me see. The only thing which is really valuable is the gold. And the people, they have a lot of gold. You know, they have the bracelets, the stuff like that. So a lot of jewelry and so on. So he said, okay, now I asked my people to bring the gold into the state treasury and we're going to give them, you know, a receipt in the form of the clay tablets. So people had to do it because he had an army behind him. So they got all the treasures people had, and in return, they got those clay tablets. Like the name says, it was tablets made from clay. The clay is, of course, of no value. It just said, so and so brought so much value, blah, blah, blah. And now this clay tablets, it has become rather valuable because it's kind of confirmation that I have somewhere in the state treasury, I have some value. And you know what? Today I'm hungry, I need this and that. Let me give you my clay tablets for whatever, 100 liters of wine. So that was the beginning of the money. And always you have monarchs, you have ruling families who take stuff from people, who steal stuff, who steal resources, shame. And people are naive, they are brainwashed, because those who are in charge, they have media resources. And they are telling them one thing, and they repeat it 100 times, so they start believing in it. So the history and present is so, intermingled. So you can see that people actually don't learn much through the time.
Yeah, and I actually had no idea that you were so, well-rounded and well-versed in all of this other stuff, because this is not what Dr. Sam Osmanagic is known for. Talking about this, like, this is real talk.
Yeah. But you learn from the history. You learn from the history. Mm. Or one more thing. We are here in Bosnia. We are considered Slavic nation. They are telling us 1,400 years ago, 1,400 years ago, the Slavic people came from the Carpathian area, which is Poland, Belarus, and Ukraine. They came to the Balkan region and, their majority and so on. And then a new science, anthropological genetics, came back in the 1990s. And through the research of our DNA and our haplogroups, people realized that we are actually here not for 1,400 years, but 75% of us, we've been here for 38,000 years. To all these cultural oases in Europe, Basques, Spain and southern France, 55,000. Second one, Balkan region, southern Europe, today's Croatia, Bosnia, Serbia, Macedonia, Montenegro, and so on, 38,000. And 75% of us are actually, we originate from those, autochthonic, from those old people who've been here for so long. Why is that important? People who've been conquering us, like ancient Romans or ancient Greeks, 2,000 years ago, 2,300 years ago, what they would do when they were going and conquer, they would erase the cultural heritage completely. Then they would be stealing of the resources, of course, minerals, metals, gold, whatever. And they were killing a lot of people. Then you realize, before ancient Romans came, our people, we could call it Illyrian or Proto-Illyrian people, we've been here for tens of thousands of years, having very developed social organization. The first civilization in Europe is Vinča civilization, 9,000 years old, while in Western Europe, Northern Europe, and Eastern Europe, it was primitive caveman level, so we were basically the most developed. And then thousands of years back, ancient Romans came, erased our cultural heritage, attacked us, divided us into smaller provinces than today's smaller countries, even though we are all the same people, speak the same language like Croatians or Serbians or Montenegrins or Macedonians, and so on. So you see that there is a system, there is a strategy how they do it. Even if there is less of them, when they attack with the brutal all force they have at one point. And when other people think, it won't come here, it is coming there and coming. So you see what they do to us. And then, I'm cosmopolitan and I love everyone. But when I see how much injustice to our people here, I said, it's time that we start researching our own history. Many people attack me from the Western world for the pyramids. And they will even more for what I'm doing right now. I try to bring some, feelings of pride, what we had before. Or another thing, It can be interesting for your viewers. Alexander the Great, 2350 years back, the 4th century before Christ. He is considered the man who spread Greek culture, Hellenistic culture. You ask Almighty Google, which language did Alexander the Great speak? The answer is A, Greek, B, dialect of Greek language. Wrong, wrong. Alexander the Great was Alexander the Macedonian. He lived in the country called Macedonia, not Greece. His father, Philip II, was Macedonian. All his generals, and he was the mightiest force of the time, all his generals spoke not Greek because they didn't know it, but Macedonian. So where was Macedonia? Macedonia was today's Macedonia, most of today's Albania, northern Greece, and you know, most of today's Bulgaria. And when I was looking for more documents, okay, which language did he speak really? One reference is quoting Alexander the Macedonian himself. He said, "Oh, Demosthen, I spent my youth in the north." And who did we have in the north? Tribals? Tribals, the communities in the area where the Serbs are now. So they are basically Serbs. Central Serbia, later on Bulgaria, with the Thracians, and with Illyrians, tribals and Illyrians. Illyrians were from today's Bosnia, Croatia, Slovenia, Montenegro, and so on. And he said, we all spoke the same language. And that was not the Greek language. When he started his, you know, conquering the known world, he had 28,000 soldiers. 20,000, mostly horsemen, were Macedonian. And 8,000, 8,000 were Greeks from conquered Greek towns. There was no ancient Greek state. There were big cities, polis, they call it the polis, city-state. The biggest one was Athens, of course. It was beautiful, 200,000 people and so on. So he conquered them, and he started conquering the rest of the known world, Mediterranean, and even further to the east, today, India, Afghanistan, and so on. So then you realize, hey, this is the reason when little country of Macedonia wanted to join EU, the Greeks were giving them a very hard time. And the Greeks said, no, 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 you cannot join the EU. You're going to have our veto. And unless you change the name of the country from Macedonia, they became Northern Macedonia. What does that mean? It means like Northern Greek province. They had to change their flag. They had the flag of Alexander the Great. They had to change the name of their main airport in Skopje, which was called Alexander the Macedonian. They had to remove some of the statues of Alexander. And the Greek today, they check their history books and they tell them what is allowed to be in there. I mean, it's a shame, you know, what they do to them. And Macedonians, they agreed on everything. They thought they're going to get to, you know, EU to become member of European Union. And guess what? Then Bulgarians came and they said, no, 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 wait a minute. You Macedonians, you don't really exist as a nation. There is no Macedonian language. There is no Macedonian culture. You're going to never get to the EU. So you see what they do to the smaller ones, small, you know, nations, small countries? Shame. So when I see such injustice, I said, well, it's time for me to react. And guess what? I start in our beautiful park. I starting erecting the beautiful statues, you know, paying for this department of art, University of Sarajevo, for people to make a statues of people like Nikola Tesla, a genius mind, totally underestimated during his times than some of the, you know, kings who actually unite the area, or queens neglected by ancient Roman historiography, and stuff like that. So I'm actually writing a new history in our park, the true history, the objective history. So I enjoy what I do. You see how the past and present and actually future also kind of come together? Yeah.
Awesome.
But we can talk about the Bosnian pyramids. That's a very exciting subject also.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I'm just enjoying this. I'm letting you go. You've been all over the place, and it's fantastic. So, yeah, where, if you want to talk pyramids,
yeah,
please.
When it comes to pyramids, you know, I mentioned that pyramids are ancient technology. They were built by superior civilization. Now, from the outside, like in Egypt, superiority can be seen in the blocks, 6 million blocks to build the Great Pyramid of Egypt. The biggest one from Aswan. Aswan is 869 kilometers from the Giza Plateau. It's 500 miles. The biggest block in Khafre, second largest pyramid, is 220 tons. In Khufu, the Great Pyramid, 80 tons. Imagine, logistic nightmare. To move a couple of hundred tons for 500 miles, not to damage it, and then install it somewhere high, and it fits perfectly with the other blocks. The following times, and what they are telling us, 100,000 slaves, no, that doesn't make sense. Someone more advanced. And those blocks, most probably, they were levitating from Aswan to Giza. But that's what's on the surface. What's even more important, they were applying the elements of sacred geometry. What are they? For example, equilateral triangle. Why this triangle? Because there are unlimited number of ways to connect three dots and only one to get equilateral triangle, the same length of sides and the same inner angles at 60 degrees. Then hexagon, very important. On 2D level, hexagon, when you draw the lines from the center point to the corners, you are getting six equilateral triangles. On 3D level, equilateral triangle is a symbol for a pyramid. So it's like you are having six pyramids. Then the next element of sacred geometry, number pi, 3.14, is considered the most important, you know, mathematical number of all. And guess what? Officially, number pi was discovered in ancient Greece 2,500 years ago. Officially, Egyptian pyramids built 4,500 years ago, so 2,000 years earlier. And then you take the size of one side of Great Pyramid of Egypt, 231 meters, two sides, 462, divided by height, 147, the result is 3.14. It's in front of our eyes. Number four, element of sacred geometry, number phi, or golden section, golden number, 1.618. And Fibonacci formula, which is a cosmic model for the whole life in the universe, from the seashells to the star systems and galaxies, spiral galaxies. Those elements, they are all incorporated in Egyptian pyramids, in Bosnian pyramids, in Stonehenge, in the major megalithic and pyramid sites. I know that because I go there, I measure, and so on. Why? When you have the elements of sacred geometry, you have movement of the energy. Egyptologists do not know that. Official archaeologists, scientists do not know that. Independent researchers do not know that. We learn that. You have a spiral, and then you have a spiral movement of the energy. And apply the same thing. So, in the case of Bosnia, we have two Fibonacci spirals. One starts with the top of the Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun, which is the largest on the planet, 368 meters. On this line, we have a top of the Love Pyramid and top of two more pyramid hills. And another one starts at the mouth of two major rivers in town of Visoko, River Fonica, River Bosna. And again, this line, we have top of the Sun Pyramid, we have entrance to the tunnels, and at the end, we have another structure called Tumux. Then you realize how layout was important to those ancient builders. You can always see the master plan. They were so smart. And everything was about the energy for them. The Bosnian Pyramid of the Sun, four-sided pyramid, is located above energy potent places. Number one, underground water flow. Water moves, it releases negative ions. They're very beneficial for us. The pyramid amplifies the concentration of negative ions. How do we know that? Because we measure. We take instruments called air ion counter, then we measure. In the tunnels, we have the highest concentrations in the world because we have the biggest pyramid. Then below the Bosnian pyramid, we have iron ore. Iron generates electromagnetic field. The pyramid pulls this field up, amplifying it. How do you know? Because we measure. You use oscilloscope. It measures electromagnetic field at the base and at the top of the pyramid. The top, the energy is 50 times stronger. It amplifies. The pyramids, and that's, you know, how those ancient builders were genius. They knew that for this planet, four-sided pyramid is the best amplifier. It's just a matter of where you're going to place it. And then we have a second water flow below the pyramid. Between the two, you have a charge, electricity. The pyramid amplifies this electricity. It goes through seven levels of passageways inside the pyramid. They are like a spiral going through the top. And at the top, we can measure an energy beam, which is 28 kilohertz in frequency. It's electrical in origin. And it goes like this. It starts at, you know, 12 feet, 4.5 meter. It expands to 20 meters, 70 feet, coming back to 13 feet, 70, 13, 70. And the strength is getting stronger and stronger as it moves away from the pyramid. In science, this phenomenon is called scalar waves. Our brilliant mind of Nikola Tesla was researching scalar waves 125 years ago. And in the last 50 years, it was Russian physicists who've been working on this phenomenon. And they both concluded that scalar waves move quicker than the speed of light. Mm-hmm. Or to be more precise, the information within the scalar fields move quicker than the speed of light. So the pyramids are ideal media for the communication, for the interstellar communication. I mean, we are proving that by measurements here in Bosnia. Egyptology has been around for 200 years, and they are still at the beginning, actually. Why? Because it's only archaeologists, Egyptologists, geologists who try to prove something without opening to interdisciplinary scientific, you know, approach, no results. That's why we are so much ahead of them. And this is not a government-run project. I mean, I'm running the project, and it's in my interest to learn more and to find out and to get the answers. So communication. You go to the tunnels under the Bosnian pyramids. You breathe well. Deeper you go, you breathe better and better. Not very logical. Nothing in Bosnia is logical. You know, if you go to the coal mine, after 10, 20 meters, lack of oxygen, they need to pump the oxygen in. In our case, deeper you go, 200 meters, 500 meters, you breathe so well. and only one entrance, which is at the same time an exit. People with the respiratory problems, asthma, bronchitis, and so on, one visit, they breathe so well, they don't need inhaler no more. People with a higher blood pressure, 180 over 120, they go inside, they come back 120 over 80, like the astronaut. People with the high sugar in the blood, they got diabetes, they go regularly 5 days or 10 days, 1 hour each day, their sugar gets on the normal level. People with the tumors, people with the very serious diseases, you can see the revolutionary progress in their health. So even though we always say, hey, we are not in the, you know, healing business, we don't give medical guarantees. However, what we do, we take testimonials of the visitors and we put them on a YouTube. And in the last 15, 18 years, we've heard so many wonderful testimonials where the visit to tunnels helped those people tremendously. It's on the daily basis. It's hundreds of cases every year. And, you know, probably majority of people don't even share their experiences with us because we are a society in which, you know, it's horrible to be sick. And then almost everyone is sick. So we realize that the second potential purpose of pyramids has to do with our health. What we do, we measure. When you can measure, if it is measurable, you can scientifically prove that. In the tunnels, the combination of 10 energy elements, very quickly. The first one, absence of all bad radiations. You and I, we live here on the surface of the planet. If it is spherical, as we are told, then we are exposed to a lot of cosmic radiations. Some of them are harmful. In the tunnels, 20 meters below the ground, no harmful cosmic radiations, no natural radioactivity, also harmful. How do we measure it? Geiger-Müller counter. No geopathogenic radiations coming from underground water flows, no signal for the cell phone, 3G, 4G, 5G, no signal for the Wi-Fi, internet. So our body does not have enemies. Our body cells, for the first time in their life, they can do their job. They can start fixing the problems. They can start the regeneration process. There's the first five. The second five, the best frequency of electromagnetic field, 28 kilohertz, is the frequency of our planet. She's our mother, and only good stuff can come from her. The best frequency of the ultrasound, 28 kilohertz, that's the frequency of the levitation. We feel light in the tunnels. Number eight, very low frequency, called ELF, extremely low frequency, of 7.83 hertz. In science, it is called the original Schumann resonance. It brings us back to the balance. Number nine, high level of organ or life energy, or in Eastern traditions called Qi or Prana. There is an instrument to actually measure organ energy on the scale from 0 to 100, cities, 20%. Villages, nature, 50%. Pyramids, 100%. And the last one is the high concentration of negative ions. I did mention them. They are very good because they clean the atmosphere or our body from all the viruses, bacteria, fungi, and so on. So when you combine those 10 elements, the Bosnian pyramid tunnels are the safest and the healthiest place on the planet. So the second purpose of the pyramid energy is to protect what is the most precious to us, our health. And we can continue. The third one that we have proven to improve the molecular structure of the water. Water becomes, on molecular level, hexagonal in shape. It's high vibrating water. We are what we drink. It improves the food. We are what we eat. It improves our spiritual abilities. It improves our immunity, it improves our blood, and so on and so forth. So in other words, our revolutionary conclusion is the pyramids were not meant to be places where you're going to have one dead body of King or Pharaoh. They were built for the living communities, and they are meant to last forever. So, you see what we do here? We change the whole paradigm, the whole narrative about the pyramids. Everything that elites guarded, you know, we changed that. We said, hey, we need to learn about the pyramid knowledge, and let's see how we can use it in our everyday use. And this is clean energy. It's unlimited, lasts forever, and it is free. Once you build a pyramid, it's free. This one has been around for 29,200 years. It still works. Maybe not the same strength like in the, you know, the beginning. Maybe at that time, the radius of the pyramid energy was maybe 100 kilometers or 500 kilometers, a couple of hundred miles. Today is just around it. But we can learn from it.
Do you have?
We can talk about
sorry, go
many,
ahead.
Many, we can talk about many subjects, but the pyramids are so exciting.
Yeah. And do you have any? You mentioned communication, Sam. Do you have any? I don't know, ideas or conjectures about who was maybe a potential target of communication or recipient of communication back in the day?
Yes. We have measured the direction of this energy, this, you know, energy beam. First, we thought, since we have the beam going through the top, probably it is at 90 degrees to the sky. Well, it is not. In the morning, this energy beam is moved a little bit to the east. This is where the sun rises. At the noontime, south. This is when the sun is at the highest point, south. In the afternoon, southwest. In the evening, west. In other words, energy beam moves with the sun's path, sun's trajectory. What does that mean? Does it mean that maybe energy beam from this planet communicates with the sun? It is possible. Does it mean that it uses sun as some type of cosmic gate to communicate with other solar systems? Technically, I guess it is possible also. And with other galaxies. And then this energy beam, this pyramid energy, is never just one way. Pyramids are emitter. I have no doubt about it. But at the same time, the pyramids are antennas. They receive the energy. So it's a two-way energy flow. So it is very possible that at some time in the past, we had this network of pyramids on different planets and different solar systems, maybe throughout our galaxy, forming some type of the cosmic internet.
That's an interesting thing to ponder.
Yeah, I see how every answer actually raises new questions.
That's annoying, isn't it?
Well, it's not really, you know. I would say that we are the first one in the world that use advanced technology, you know, georadar, geothermal, and ways of determining the age, radiocarbon dating, uranium thorium analysis, luminescence analysis. But above all, the experts for the energy phenomena come to us, we measure, we find always some new stuff, and then you know that this is technology, this was the technology created by very smart, intelligent hands.
And have you ever gone in your books? You've written a lot of books, right? So, I mean, do you get into talking about potential connections with Atlantis, this kind of stuff? Do you go there?
I got 20 books behind me, and one of them was actually dedicated to the land of Atlantis, the mysterious civilization of Atlantis. You know, people usually think, oh, that was a land, an island, somewhere, maybe Atlantic Ocean or Mediterranean or somewhere else. But actually, the story is a little bit more complex, the way I see it. At one point in the past, 55,000 years back, we had two huge islands or two small continents in the Atlantic Ocean, just between the Europe and the North American continent. And after a huge disaster hit our planet, one of the continents actually sunk on the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. The reason why? It was of the volcanic origin. The second one remained. And until 55,000 years ago, we probably had the first phase of the Atlantis. The second one was destroyed back 18,500 years ago, and the third one with the end of the last ice age and the global catastrophes 12,000 years back. Maybe it's 11,800, maybe it is 13,500, but let's say 12,000 years back. So the way I see it, probably three different phases of the Atlantis. We go deeper to the past, they were more and more spiritual. They're coming back to our times, they're becoming more, more with the physical aspect and the wish to rule, to control, to exactly what we have nowadays. So, yes, I believe that geologically speaking, we did have a lot of land mass. How big was that second island that sunk 12,000 years ago? It seems it was 400 kilometers by 200 kilometers, or 250 miles by 80 miles. So it's a big, big island or small continent. When it comes to the civilization, then I would say probably two races, white to the north, black to the south. And of course, whites were doing, administrative stuff. They were religion leaders, political leaders, stuff. Those people in the south, agricultural activities. They were more warlike. They were soldiers and so on. Technology, they were able to fly, but using different energy sources. They were using at that time very strong energy. Potent places, they were following them, they were using a lot of solar energy, and stuff like that. So yeah, I'm positive that civilization existed then. When they started doing those haplogroups, they realized that on four different continents there was the same haplogroup. Basques had the same in Europe, had the same haplogroup like Berbers in Northern Africa, the same haplogroup in Amazon, certain tribes, tribal community, and the same haplogroup in Guatemala. Four continents, the same haplogroup, the same people, the same origin. What's missing? The distribution center was right in the middle, the land of Atlantis.
I like how you put that. Well, where do we go from there? I mean, I'm happy to continue talking about Atlantis, or if you want to circle back to the pyramids. I mean, what's happening of late in recent your recent work in excavation there? I wanted to ask you that earlier. I mean, where are things at now?
Well, just 3 months back, we discovered one more entrance to the tunnels. We call it Ravne 6. Ravne is the Bosnian word meaning flat. So this area was flat at one point in the time. So Ravne 2, Ravne 3, 4, 5, 6. And starting June, the volunteers are coming. So we will be very busy clearing those tunnels. We found one opening section. It's about 65 meters open completely. The rest of it is closed, so we're going to be removing the drywalls and we're going to be clearing. So, it's like untouched archaeological site and the beauty of what we do. We don't know what we're going to find next. In other Ravne tunnels, we are discovering some of the artifacts, but they are not the major thing. The major thing is really the energy properties. Nikola Tesla once said that if you want to find out the secrets of the universe, you need to view it through the energy, frequency, and vibration. And guess what? Our project is not about the archaeology. It is about the energy, pyramids, energy amplifiers, very specific frequencies that affect our vibrations. Higher we vibrate, more happier, more fulfilled, more spiritual we are. So where do we go from here? I think we need to change the global consciousness. Not that we don't want to pressure too much, but showing that you learn the true history, you combine it with the science and spirituality, not religion. Religion is different things, spirituality, energy properties, healing, but healing using natural remedies, healing using negative ions, healing using high vibrating water in the Bosnian pyramids that we find, that kind of healing. And then with our beautiful park, culture, and festivals, and sports, and stuff like that, they're proving there is an oasis in the world that can show us different way. So imagine 10 similar places in Bosnia, 20 in Serbia and Croatia, 50 in Germany, 100 in the US. We would change the world. You don't need to wait for the governments. They got us in this trouble time and time again, thousands and thousands of years. Always the same thing. We, the people, could decide on our destiny. This is where do we go from here? We take destiny in our own hands, and we live satisfied lives.
Beautiful. I mean, I almost want to just stop you there because it's such a great way to
All right, so we're going to end here this time.
Sam, what at the moment, I mean, you're about to go on a European tour, you mentioned. So maybe for anyone listening in Europe to this interview, what information should they have about that if they want to come and see you?
They can. First, if they want to learn more about, what we do, what I think, what I write, there is a website where they can read for free my books. It's very simple. www.booksbydrsam.com. Books by Dr. Sam, Sam.com. So it's about, I think, at least 10 books where they can read about Bosnian pyramids, but all other, sites in the world. And if they want to check with us on daily basis, we have two official Facebook accounts. One is under my name, Sam Osmanagić, another one, Bosnian Pyramids, or Instagram, also my name. And so, they can check where I'm going to go, where the lectures will be held, things of that nature.
And do you have any tours outside of Europe planned for the foreseeable future?
Where?
Outside, say, US, Mexico. I'm in Mexico, I'd love to have you over here.
Yes, US, I'll be there actually shortly after my European tours, 5 weeks, 1 week rest here in Visoko, and then I'm flying to California. California, but not Baja California, but American side. In LA, I have a couple of conferences, so I'll be in LA. So they can learn about the conferences I'm going to have on our YouTube, Bosnian Pyramids TV, Bosnian Pyramids TV. Or our Facebook or Instagram.
Beautiful, beautiful. And what's your Instagram handle? Would you mind letting us know?
It's my name. It's Sam Osmanagić, Dr. Sam Osmanagić.
Is Facebook the same as well?
Yes.
Beautiful. Okay, well, I'm going to make sure everyone goes
Sam
there.
Osmanagić and Bosnian Pyramids. Facebook, Bosnian Pyramids also.
Awesome. Well, Sam, with that, really, this has been fantastic. We've covered so much ground. Now you can obviously talk for hours. I thought so. So, hopefully we can do this again sometime. It'd be
Yeah,
fantastic.
we'll do
I
it.
really
Yeah.
appreciate it, mate. Thank you so much.
I'll be happy to, yes.
Beautiful. All
Okay,
right. Well,
man.
I'll be in touch at some point. Take care.
All
All right.
right. Thank
Many
you.
thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Dr. Sam. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
I just wanted to let you know that we have now introduced private members-only Q&A sessions into the Truthiversity. This is something that our members will have access to. So if you want to ask your questions of the experts on the podcasts, and get answers in real time, then head over to truthiversity.com and become a member. I'll see you inside. Cheers.